Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are, and live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so I don't.
All right, this is going to be a little bit groundbreaking today, okay? So we actually might have Tim Lynch on a decent connection, so... I'm confused. How about if we do this? Are you there?
Computer rigged up, but I couldn't hear shit when you called. I guess I'm not rigged up right.
You couldn't hear shit when I called?
Yeah, I had on my Bluetooth headphones and my microphone, my broadcasting microphone hooked up to the computer. But when you called, I didn't hear shit. And so I'm calling you on my iPhone.
All right. So we're going to do iPhone. I don't like that, man.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey. I'm here.
All right. Yeah, what was going on there? All right. So anyway, but you sound better on this.
Yeah, no. It's still the messenger. I just had what I thought was a high-speed professional broadcaster setup, and much to my chagrin, not quite.
That will always be the case because electricity doesn't like to work the way you think it is. And then it'll be one stupid little switch, which is always the way it is. Trust me. I know. Hey, okay, we're going to be live in a minute. Okay, got it. Cricket, cricket, cricket. You're like, what? Hey, dead air, what's going on? Oh, I don't know what. You're looking at plugs, you're looking at switches. All of a sudden you look and here's some little stupid thing that's flipped in the wrong direction. And then it goes on. And then the magic begins. The breaking news right now, boys, out of Tehran. And that is this is as of 9 minutes, as reported by the Associated Press. A state-run news agency in Iran is reporting a suicide bombing in the country's southeast has killed at least 20 elite Revolutionary Guard personnel and wounded another 20. The IRNA news agency reported the toll in a bombing on Wednesday in Sistan and the Balkiristan province. No group immediately claimed responsibility for the attack. The province, which lies on a major opium trafficking route, has seen occasional clashes between Iranian forces and Baluch separatists, as well as drug traffickers. Jeff, any comment?
Yeah. Well, Iran is sometimes you get the impression that it's a unified Islamic fundamentalist state. That's antithetical to us, doesn't like us. But the truth is, there's a lot of discord in that country. It's very ethnically diverse, and it manifests itself in terrorist groups. When I first went there in 1976, there was a group called the Tudeh, T-U-D-E-H, and they were communists, flat out communists, and they were insurgents. And they were doing stuff like what you just described. And that was in the 70s. And then, of course, that was overshadowed by the groundswell of Ayatollah Khomeini.
Right.
And that about a third of the country is very, devoutly Shia. And so, there's that. But there is a lot of pushback. They like the idea of having a say in the government by the mass, the Iranian people. So we don't know half of what's going on. I'm surprised that got out in that and that level of detail.
And I was going to say the same thing, that, the only things that get out are the things that they want out. And that's not a story that they like to tell when the Revolutionary Guard takes it on the chin. that right. story normally doesn't get told very completely. So I agree with you. Pretty interesting that it got told at all.
And it's like that kid yesterday in the hotel. I mean, they're everywhere, all over. You know, they're in the Emirates. They're in Dubai itself. They're in Turkey, and they're here in the United States. And a huge ethnic huge Armenian Christian population. You know, that has, of course, most of them have left because of the persecution. But, Iran is definitely, it's not the monolith that, you know, you think. And the irony of it is they were, like, so solidly behind America up until President Carter kind of pulled the plug on support for them. But,
We were at dinner. Jeff and I met Jeff yesterday afternoon at Camp Pendleton. We drove down and had dinner with General Furness last night, and so we were taking a picture. But for whatever reason, like they rolled up the city at 9 o'clock last night. We couldn't find anybody to take a picture for us. So I think Dave walked in and asked somebody who worked in the hotel. Turns out it's kind of funny, right? You'll hear somebody talk, right? And you'll know what part of the world they're from. And you look at them and say, where are you from? Now, he's an Iranian, right? And he says, I'm Persian. Like, oh, you're speaking in code. Right? So, are you a good Persian? Are you a good Persian or a bad Persian? And so I said, oh, you mean Iranian? And he said, yes. And so then Jeff, it says, I was stationed in Iran in 76
to 78, yeah.
So then, you know, then Jeff and he start comparing notes and where they've been and what's going on. But he's a very nice young man, right? His family, he couldn't leave Iran when his family did because he was of military age.
Right.
But he's here now and he's enjoying his life. And, and he went out of his way to point out, you know, that regime does not reflect the Iranian people.
Right.
And we said, we know that. Could you take a picture? And he said, sure. And not only did he take one picture, he moved.
Like seven of them.
Yeah, he moved the angle, and he pout for me, baby.
Get a drone and take a picture of us from above. he was into it, man.
He would have. Tim, thoughts on the bombing in Iran? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's no mystery when you said Sistine. You know, it's the Baluch. I mean, they've got some serious issues. And I was talking to the governor of Nimrod's province back when you guys were in Dwyer, and he had fought the Soviets from Iran. He's a Baluch. The most of Nimrods were Baluch. And I said, you know, we were just talking about the Persians because he's all pissed off at him. I had cut off too much water from the helmet with my stupid project, so I was in trouble.
Uh-oh.
And I remarked to him, I said, you know, that the Persian, you know, per capita, they have more plastic surgery than any other peoples in the world, you know, mostly nose jobs and boob jobs.
Yep.
And he sneered, and he goes, the Persian is always concerned about how he looks. I mean, the look on his face when he said that, it scared me. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm glad I'm not Persian. But, yeah, they're not very – they've got a lot of people in that country who are not interested in the mullahs, and that's a huge problem.
I have to tell you that if you're cutting off water that's ultimately serving the opium crop, you have bigger issues than than nose jobs and boob jobs, my friend.
Oh, okay, yeah, but oh no, they rocketed the city the next day. The Iranians did. It was and I got in trouble with the people at Leatherneck until I pointed out to them that, you know, I submitted the plans to you. And you said okay, because I was working for your G9. Yeah, it was hysterical. But we cut the helmet. didn't mean to, but we did.
Oops. Yeah, that'll get you in a lot of trouble when you start messing with water in that part of the country, in that part of the world.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, water's kind of a big deal. The I have kind of a cultural question. We were talking about this last night, and so let me get this is a political question for both of you. And we were talking last night about how does it make sense that you're going to capture the presidency as the Democratic Party, and everybody who the nation sees on television is talking about socialism and not funding DHS, not building a wall, Medicare for everybody, national work programs, and it's this tack to not only the center of the left, right, as opposed to like the Democratic Party when we were kids, which was relatively conservative party, but they were for labor, they were for the working person, blah, 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 blah. But they were solidly conservative on defense, and so all that. Now, so I'm curious about each of your thoughts about how do they honestly expect to be able to sell that to the middle third of the country that actually elects the president of the United States? Because I don't see how that math works. So, Jeff, your thoughts?
Well, I think that the Democrats are doing this initially to win the nomination. And so to win the nomination, they're going to try and out-left each other so that the people in the big cities who will secure the nomination for them, the big city Democrats in L.A. and New York and places like that, will go ahead and vote for them. Then I think what they'll do is tack, by their definition, tack back to the center for the election, whoever it is.
But how do you do that when everything you say is going to be recorded and you're going to start flipping in front of the national audience?
Yeah, well, I have to tell you, I always thought that. But then you look, the flipper, no one pays attention to these. I mean, not no one, but there's huge numbers of people, and maybe it's different now, who just ignore stuff. I mean, like John Kerry with this frayed fatigue jacket in the early 70s talking about, you know, basically stabbing all his fellow veterans from Vietnam right in the back,
whoa,
calling them baby killers and stuff like that.
Right.
And then in the state that's got, like, heck, I mean, buttloads of former Marines and Vietnam vets who live right there in the Boston area, these sons of bitches vote for him. And it's like they just don't remember. Did you forget that? You know, did you forget Bill Clinton, who, you know, you got him saying, I loathe the military and all this shit? I guess what happened is, you know, you get the right numbers. Like, a lot of people just flat out don't vote.
Well, here's what I would say. Okay, yeah. So look, the Democrats are going to vote for him anyway, but it's those swing voters, they elect the president. And
yeah.
So I don't see them.
Yeah.
I don't see them going that way.
Well, I think the issue is the dominant media narrative that we've lived with all of our lives. If you think back to when Warren rolled out her DNA test, she had already agreed with all the main press people that this proved she was American Indian, and she was right. It wasn't until the internet started taking apart the percentages involved and comparing them that anybody found out. Because, I mean, I've got right on my computer, I've got screenshots of the main press. Of main outlets saying Elizabeth Warren was right. She is American Indian.
Yeah, you're right.
But that lasted all
Internet,
of 15 minutes.
The Internet's a big walk.
That's right. That's right. It's 15 minutes that lasted before she became a laughingstock, and she'll never recover.
Okay, here's my question.
That's why they're doing it.
All right, so my question is this, though. That middle third voter that elected George Bush the Elder, then elected Bill Clinton twice, Clinton running as a moderate, right, then elects George Bush Jr., right, then elects Barack Obama twice after Bush twice. Barack Obama, he wrapped himself as a moderate to get elected, right?
He was vague, if you remember.
Right? I mean,
he was vague.
Deliberately vague, right? Okay, and
said
so
dumb stuff
right?
Like hope and change.
Exactly.
Without being specific.
Exactly. And so, but that, so he gets elected. And then the country elects, the same country elects Donald Trump. So how, nothing about that electorate says they're willing to go near Bernie Sanders, that middle third of the country that will elect the president. So I'm just curious about your thoughts about what must the Democrats think, right, about that middle third where they think they could peel it off with the really far left rhetoric that comes out of the party. I just find it quizzical to me.
I mean, what choice do they have?
They're also inside their own self-constructed bubbles. Like I sit here, as do both of you, and I go on the internet to look at news and stuff like that, but the sites I'm looking at are not going to have content on them from Slate Magazine or those other outlets, because I don't care what they say. And I think that people like Ocasio-Cortez or AOC, whatever her name is, I think she honestly believes in what she's saying, because she's not a well-educated person. She doesn't understand the complexities involved. And so they're inside these media bubbles where they think everybody thinks like them. I remember when Trump won, everybody was mystified. How could that be? And I knew he was going to run. I put a blog post in May before the election he was going to win, because my truck drivers, I was a safety coordinator.
Yeah, but you know,
the world they were seeing.
You know what they say about that? The sun shines on a dog's ass every once in a while, Timmy. So at some point when you predict enough, you got to get something right. And you had a 50-50 shot.
No, I know. But I tell you what, I was just responding to what my drivers were saying they were seeing all over the country, everywhere they went.
Really?
Nothing but Trump.
That's true. That's true. Going to Pittsburgh.
Which doesn't mean anything.
Seeing all the bumper stickers for him.
Yeah, which doesn't mean that much, because around here there was nothing but Beto signs before the last election, but he got thumped. So, but at the time I felt that that it was the most of the American people dismissing the mainstream media narrative, because they no longer trust them or even like them. I don't watch the news anymore. Why bother? Who the hell cares what they say? Half of it is junk.
Yeah, that's
half,
true.
Half of it?
And Trump's the first one to really use this social media stuff effectively. I mean, to this day, and in some ways, even people who support him will say, I wish he'd just shut up a little bit. But that's not how he talks right to us. And he doesn't sugarcoat it. He doesn't try and do very much tact or you know, to kind of dress up what he
says.
He's
a butthead. Come on, tell the truth. He's a butthead.
I don't see it. I don't.
You don't
see
when you look at his head. You don't see two large lumps.
Are you kidding me, man? You're talking about ugly.
I don't.
You're talking about weird looking. You got to look at.
I agree. Look, I like a lot of his policies, but he's a blockhead, okay? But that's not the question here. That's for us debating him for a different time. The question is,
who's not a blockhead? Who do you admire in this whole field of dudes?
Me, you know? I'm not a blockhead. I'm not a blockhead myself.
Personally. I mean, you know, people who are running for office and stuff.
Oh, well, that's a different issue. No, but here's okay, boys, stay disciplined. Will the middle third of America, right? That elects the president, will they buy a candidate that's that liberal? I mean, even Amy Klobuchar, senator from Minnesota, came out and she scoffed at the idea that she was a moderate. Like that was something wrong. Like there was something wrong with being a towards the either middle of the Democratic Party or towards the conservative side of the Democratic Party. You know, that she kind of had to create distance with that perception so that she could be accepted by the far left. And so when that you see that, it's like that's a head scratcher, because look, I think her position is a powerful one, right? Because to me, she always comes across in a measured way, which even though I don't agree with all of her views, I'll listen to what she has to say, because to me she comes across as somebody who's balanced with a different point of view than mine, so I don't mind that. But will the country buy something that far left? I just don't see it. I don't see the country going there.
I don't either.
But Obama's Senate record was as liberal as they come. I mean,
he voted
up and he got covered.
He
didn't vote on anything. Yeah, he did. Yeah, it's very calculated. But he was a pretty liberal guy, but he got covered from the mainstream media. And as I mean, it started with the Dan Rather thing back in the 90s with that bogus George Bush fit rep. And the internet now is at the point now where it's like they're instantly dismissing some of these MSM tropes they're putting forward, such as Elizabeth Warren.
Okay, you're getting off the subject, though. The question is, will that middle third buy candidates that are that far left?
I don't think so.
Jeff says no.
I say no.
Yeah.
The only thing that would hurt is if Trump, for some reason or other, got off his you know, the things that got him elected the first time and goes to the middle, then they might just not vote at all. And then he might, you know, then it could lead to his defeat. Doesn't seem like it's going that way.
He's a middle guy, though. He is a middle guy. I mean, he knows where his base is and he feeds that. But I mean, he used to be a Democrat, for God's sake. I mean, let me tell you, and he would make a deal on immigration tomorrow that would rupture, you know, Ann Coulter's aorta, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, she would be like, Ann Coulter was declared dead this morning. She had a conniption fit and died of that shortly after the president struck his deal with Democrats over immigration and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. In my opinion, he would do that. But I say this, if he, and he will, well, or maybe not, in the next 2 years, if we make progress on some kind of economic treaty with the Chinese, right, and he's able to efficiently wind down our involvement in both Syria, I mean, keep a strategic presence, but wind down our daily presence in those conflicts and Afghanistan, then, in my opinion, he'll get reelected. Because the economy will go, when the agreement with China, everybody will take a sigh of, will breathe a sigh of relief and say, okay, we're now headed in the right direction on terra firma, and so this is going to be good for the economy, for the global economy, and he's done a good job of kind of ferreting through these shit storms that we've been involved in, and the nation looks like it's headed for a better place, blah, 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 blah. I would say that he gets reelected. And I don't think a candidate, I mean, to me, as lame as he is, Joe Biden would be the most formidable candidate because he can take a chunk out of the center that, in my opinion, the other candidates don't. So.
Yeah, but you're missing one thing, Mac. I agree with all that. But here's the thing that Trump has brought out. And he never even actually talked about this, but the government now is a monolith. And it's almost unbeatable. I mean, they are protecting themselves.
Are you playing this deep state card on me?
Yeah. Like, I'll tell you, the VA.
Here we go.
The average person who gets in charge of the VA, I mean, General Shinseki, the guy before him, the guy right after him, immediately they think, my main thing I have to take care of is these people who work for me. No,
exactly.
Guy, that's not the main thing. The main thing is why the government, why this agency exists. And the first thing these agencies do is take care of themselves. And then if they got anything left over, they'll try and take care of the reason they're there. I don't care if you're talking to the VA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, any of that stuff.
Why are
That's
you so? Why are you so jaded? Why do you believe that?
Because it's true.
Well, look at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They had a pedophile assaulting teenage Indian boys for 20 friggin' years. Guys diming him out, saying, "Hey, look, this is wrong. This guy's a pedophile," and they get fired. He stays on. It wasn't until last year that they finally busted him.
So the Bureau of Indian Affairs went to leadership's program sponsored by the Catholic Church. Okay, and they handle their prices the same way. So now that makes them bad people.
But it's the teachers' unions too. I mean, the teachers are preying on these kids just as bad as any priest or nun. I mean,
How do you know that? Because you're not the first person that said that to me.
Well, that's what I mean. I know it because I read it and because it comes out. These people, all these teachers get in trouble with young kids, with young girl students, with young boy students. And I'll tell you what, it's difficult to get rid of them even after that. The unions, they're part of this deep state thing.
Shit.
What do you mean shit, man? I mean, it's like, why do we need all this stuff?
At the idea of the deep state, okay?
General. You're scoffing.
Okay.
And here's why.
Hold on. Let me finish my point. My point is this. Okay. And then you watch the whole Mueller thing with the FBI and the text messages and that shit, and the person inside of me that scoffs at that, right, watches that and say, shit, the pinheads like Kenny are right about this, right? So the sun is shining on that dog's ass now. And so, but then you see it happen and you're like, they're not. I mean, they took an oath to support and defend the Constitution, and they're putting their hand on the scale. That isn't right. That isn't
exactly
right. They need to be taken out and executed, right? It's not what we do.
So. You know, the FBI, though, has so many besmirchments in their history. From the time they first were allowed to carry guns, they shot each other. They shot innocent people. Yeah. They fucked up left, right, and center. They went after the wrong guy. I mean, sometimes they did stuff good, but the overweening and absolute priority always was, we got to protect the Bureau. No, motherfucker, right. you gotta catch crooks. That's what you gotta do.
But you could have been describing the Marine Corps there. They shot each other. They shot the wrong people. I thought, whoa, who are we talking about here? Because we do that.
You're right, and I hate that we do that.
I know.
And Jeff's right. When the FBI got its start, it was protecting Indians in Oklahoma who were getting ripped off from the oil rights, and they hired Texas pistoleros, Texas Ranger gunmen to come up there and clean that all out. They had to hire them as contractors because their agents kept on doing goofy crap and getting I think they got killed and shit, too. They were just incompetent.
Shot these three Conservation Corps guys. They shot each other. They dropped the guy out of the window by mistake. Oh, yeah, and just like Timmy said, they went to Oklahoma and Texas and hired these gun dudes, you know. And
right.
You know.
That's right.
The guy
exactly
who killed
Dillon
is one of those guys.
The Osage Indians. That's the start of the FBI. But let me go deep state on you, Matt. Three years ago, we were on the radio, and yes. I said that this FBI, I mean, this collusion thing between Russia and Trump was a hoax. I told you that there was a book written by two reporters on the Clinton campaign who witnessed Robbie Mook and her chief of staff start to spin this Russian collusion narrative that they fed to the newspapers and whatnot. 3 years later, millions, tens of millions of dollars spent on Mueller and crew, where are we?
Yeah.
No collusion. Exactly what I told you 3 years ago. And it all started in a book. It's right there for anybody to see. But the narrative keeps on pushing. The narrative insists it has to be there. Who else? How else could America reject the light bringer Hillary Clinton, who's a despicable person in my personal opinion?
Hillary Clinton's no. Okay, so the sun is shining on all kinds of dogs' asses this morning. Here's a text message. Same with the Forest Service. Fucking disgusting. And that is, they'll protect themselves before they'll do their job. So the first interest is perpetuate the bureaucracy, protect the bureaucracy. And that's when you say, for instance, when you look at the VA, and let's talk about the VA for a second. Why do I have to go get my hemorrhoids looked at by a VA doctor? I mean, there's nothing special about that. Why can't there be a program called Vetacare, which is kind of a wordplay off Medicare? So here's your Vetacare card, okay, and it will cover 80%, so there's going to be a 20% copay out of your pocket, blah, 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 or whatever the hell Congress enacts, right? You can go see a general practitioner about all these normal human things, okay? However, when you deal with mental health, when you deal with prosthetics, when you deal with Agent Orange stuff, you will come to the VA. So the VA will be world-class, like the Mayo Clinic of combat maladies and things like that, right? And then everything else you can go to your local provider for. I mean, how does that not make sense? Except that the VA is a job program. All over the fucking country.
And there it is. That's the most sensible suggestion I've heard. I've heard you make it before. Who would not agree with that? It's a reasonable suggestion that we both know, all three of us know, will never, ever, ever happen. Because the bureaucracy exists to grow and expand and protect itself. That's what it's all about.
That stuff that came out during, I guess it was President Obama's end of his first tour, where they're filming these guys having these conventions in Hawaii and places, and they're in hot tubs, and they're filming ridiculous little, you know, and none of it, they never once even mention a veteran, you know, and it's like, it's just egregious. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, are we done with the black helicopter? Can we land the black helicopter right now?
Or do we need... Shine the sun on another ass, Mac. Let's move.
Well, yeah, what Lynch doesn't tell you is these are the only three things he's got right in 3 years, okay? He's lumped them all into one discussion, very effectively, I might add.
Yeah,
and people are listening for the first time going, who is this guy, Lynch? He gets it all right.
Dr. Lynch.
Yes. Dr. Lynch, who is this ass clown?
See, and I reject the narrative. That's why I reject that narrative. Well, you wouldn't have me on all the time, brother. Come on, man.
I reject that narrative, sir. I reject that narrative, sir.
I reject that narrative. It's better than saying "fuck you" like in Good Company.
I don't know. That's a pretty effective tool. Well, that leaves me with only one thing to say to you, sir. Fuck you.
Yeah. See, fuck your narrative.
It is effective in that situation. All right, it is effective. Let's see. They are 100% right. Oh. Here they go. Here now, all the other weirdos are coming out of the woodwork now. All the other black helicopter jackasses, right? They are.
They're walking dead. They're all shuffling forward.
Exactly. They're coming out. They're like cockroaches coming out at night. No, it does. It bothers me when Sean Hannity's right, because Sean Hannity doesn't care about the truth, right? He doesn't. He's a conservative dude, and all he talks about, for instance, if you can't say Bill Clinton's a great politician. Right now, in addition to that, he's a lying, you know, bad human being, in my opinion. But Bill Clinton, if you can't say that, if you can't admit the things that are plainly true, then I have no time for you as a propagandist.
It's like I'm talking with Paul Kennedy, and he said, just along those lines, said that guy Bill Clinton's the type of guy. When he walks in a room, everybody likes him. It's just one of them things.
Right.
You know, and I agree. I believe
say
that.
Exactly that.
I think people like.
Yep.
Him.
But again, you can't. How do you have a rational conversation with somebody who can't admit the truth? So you can see my natural, like, Sean Hannity deep state. That might actually be true. And then you're reading all these text messages, and you're looking at the shit, and you're looking at the idiot Comey, right? And you're like, okay, let's role play. Okay? I'll be Comey, all right? Jeff, you can be the president. And Timmy, you're going to be Jared Kushner, okay? So we're standing in the Oval Office, and I'm the president, and I say, Comey, you need to hang around here, okay? Comey, what do you say?
I thought you were Comey, and I was the president.
Yeah, you can't be the president. Comey. I'm the president.
Well, okay, now this is Jeff Kenney is Comey, right?
You're Comey, yeah. I'm the president.
Right to that, sir. I'm waiting.
Okay. All right. And then Tim,
but that's not what the Comey said.
Okay, shut up. Okay, Tim, okay, now you're Kushner, and what do you say?
Hey, Dad, I think we ought to have somebody else in the room while you've got the FBI director here. If you don't mind,
right.
I'll stay. How's that?
Hey, good thought, son. Get the fuck out of here. All right.
Yeah.
All right. And so Tim, so Jared leaves, and now it's you and I. Okay, so. Comey, what the door closes, you and I, since he received the nomination, right? You've been getting emails and people buttonholing you and saying, if you don't know what buttonholing you means, ask your grandpa. Okay,
right.
So people buttonholing you saying, hey, man, I got to tell you something. Everything that guy says, write down, okay, because he is going to come after you and he's going to try to bend you and blah, 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 and you can't do that, right? So it all leads to this moment, door shuts, Kushner walks out. Played by Tim Lynch, right? And so I look at you, and you look at me, and what do you say?
I say, what can I do for you, Mr. President? You may ask me to stay.
Right. And I say, I want to talk about this whole Flynn thing. And you say?
I say, in what regard? Are you saying that you want me to, you know, this guy, you know, apparently he got exposed.
You're
as,
fucking this up, man. That's not what he says. You're spring loaded. Well, so when I introduce that subject.
Said, I know what he said. He didn't say anything. He made Trump do all the talking.
Well, isn't that stupid? I mean, when the door closes and we're alone and I've been warned that this is going to happen, I mean, the first thing that comes out of my mouth when you say Flynn is, I cannot talk about that with you. Right?
Exactly.
Unless you want me to summarize where we're at, I can do that for you. But if you want to talk to me about it, I have to put you on notice that I cannot go there. I can't believe you fucked that up. Anyway,
well, here's the thing, man. I mean, we don't know, you know, how much Trump knew at that point, because in my opinion, like what Timmy was talking about earlier with the whole investigation regarding, you know, this false narrative put out by Robbie Mook and those other people that Trump was colluding, And now all this thing about here's Flynn, who's basically talking to the Russian ambassador. He's about to be the national security advisor. Of course he's going to talk to the Russian ambassador. He's going to talk to all those people. All of a sudden, this is suspicion of a crime. Then on the other side, you have the Clintons. I mean, it's all over the place, not even hidden. The uranium deal, you know, all this other stuff. And so if I'm Trump, I'm thinking, what the hell's going on here?
You're not Trump, though. You're not Trump. You're Comey.
I mean, if I'm Comey, I'm like, I better shut up because I'm
right.
on the other team.
Right.
I'm on the other team, and I'm violating my oath.
Right. You know, how hard is that if you're Comey? Hard or easy?
Easy.
Easy. Right? And so then he continues to talk, and then what do you say? Like, sir, I have to leave. I can't be a part of this conversation. Yes?
Right.
And then, so now, instead of going, so now you leave. So now I could go down to my car and write a bunch of notes and dictate into my phone, or I could do what I'm supposed to do, which is report to the Attorney General. Hey, I have to tell you this. You're my boss. The President, you know, stopped me, wanted to talk about this, and I need you to know this. Okay?
Right.
I mean, it's easy. Comey didn't do any of that shit. He played reindeer games with it. Hey,
yeah.
Guys, that guy was so out of his league, it's a joke. And he betrayed his oath to the country. And he wants to stand up like he's a choir boy when he was playing reindeer games with the FBI. It's bullshit.
Well, you know, and all these mafia prosecutions where they're going after all these Italians, that's all they can do. These guys come out of jail now, and they want to relive the glory days, you know? And there's an 86-year-old guy who they think is stealing, bingo slips. Because it's not about doing the job. It's about looking good.
And so Comey writes down a bunch of memos, which were probably classified, gives them to his college roommate to distribute to the press.
I don't know how you get away with that.
What we call the deep state move. That's deep state shit there, bro. That's
yeah.
that's not what honorable people do.
Yeah,
I just
for
wanted
sure.
to point that out.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. And it, yeah. you're watching it, and you're watching Comey going, dude, like, all you had to do is just, you're the director of the FBI. And here's the, again, he got told from the time Trump got nominated, this is how he does with everybody, okay? What he does is he tries to drag you into the sinkhole that he lives in with guys like Michael Cohen and these other schlep losers that, you know, that are so busy trying to get their nasal column up his ass, right? That if Trump stops short, it starts a, like, 12-car pileup behind him. And so, be aware of that, all right? And so, and then what is Comey? At the moment of truth, Comey shrinks. He does not do his duty for the nation, and it's pretty cut and dried at that point, right? Hey, I can't talk mm-hmm. to you about that. If you continue, I have to leave. That's fine. Well, if you leave, I'll fire you.
Yeah.
Fire me, motherfucker. Poof. Right? Whoa, where's he going? Where's Kelly? Kelly wasn't around at that point.
Well, you remember all that stuff about the IRS going after?
Yes.
Like, you know, and so where was Mueller? Mueller was the head of the FBI then. You know, where Obama just basically, there was never any move by the Attorney General, then Gerald, then Eric Holder, or any of those folks to go after that obvious crime. The person in charge of that, the IRS, she takes the fifth and then continues to give the Republican side shit. I mean, all these, you know, actual red lines are crossed and nothing happens. And you ask the president about it, O'Reilly asked the president, there's not even a smidgen of corruption.
Wait, hey, how about that? The head of the IRS takes the fifth.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
How bizarre is that?
It's crazy shit. It's like you were doing what? Wait a minute, hold on, here's another text message. That's deep state shit there, bro. I just spit my coffee out.
Yeah, I was gonna point that out. But the other thing is why wasn't there a big outrage? It goes back to the media controlled narrative that spoon fed us.
You're right.
There's no doubt about that. If it had been a Republican that did that, we'd still be hearing about it.
Well, let me ask you this: how scary is it though when the truth doesn't matter anymore?
Yeah.
I mean, that's straight up. Yeah. I mean, look, the truth should be the truth, and there used to be a day again. You go back to the ghost of Walter Cronkite, right? You know, frumpy old grandpa on TV, you know, telling the truth most of the time, right?
I don't know about that.
You don't? You think Walter Cronkite was lying?
Well, I think, I think Walter Cronkite knew was clued in on stuff they knew about, like from President Kennedy, you know, all the way up through, you know, Johnson. Johnson said when Cronkite, through phony reporting, you know, edited in gunfire and stuff when he was visiting Vietnam after the Tet Offensive, he said, if I've lost Walter, we've lost. I've lost Walter. You're not supposed to fucking have Walter, buddy.
Walter was a symbol of the American middle class.
That's the narrative, which I don't accept, by the way. That he's supposed to be unbiased. Unbiased. Mm-hmm. I mean, Richard Nixon fucking blows his nose, you know, with the same Kleenex twice. They report that as evidence of his lack of character. But President Kennedy, he's screwing everything that walks in the White House, in the swimming pool, you know, with reporters there. And none of them see
shit. He had sex with somebody in a pool with reporters there.
Yeah, reporters was in there with him.
Well, that's different. Mm-hmm. That's different. Reporting and participating, then you're no longer a reporter if you're participating.
Since FDR, the Fourth Estate, has been solidly behind these guys. They just thought he was the cat's ass. You know, with his fireside chats and his stupid quotes like, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Yeah, it sounds good, but it's really nonsensical when you think about it.
You know what? That was a quality impersonation of FDR. Do a little bit more FDR for me. Today is a
Eleanor,
day.
Eleanor. Eleanor, you resemble the horses.
My guests today on the roundtable are Jeff Kenny. You wouldn't know it. You would know it. He's prior enlisted, but he rose to the rank of colonel of infantrymen in the United States Marine Corps, and he retired. And Tim Lynch, he's prior enlisted Navy, rose to the rank of major United States Marine Corps, and then retired. And me, I'm not prior enlisted. I don't deal with the stain of that. I'm a purebred officer of the United States.
Unwashed intervention.
I am purebred, unlike these two stained wretches.
Born with a silver Mameluke sword.
Exactly. Sir, where is my Mameluke to cut my birthday cake with? All right. Another question. Mac, you often go off on the Chinese. I'd be curious to hear what both your guests had to say about the Chinese. I am solidly anti-Chinese, okay?
Right.
And so they're curious, what do you two ass clowns think of that?
I am solidly anti-Chinese, too. I'm alarmed at how they're grabbing territory and basically daring us to try to stop them. Their economy's made on sand. And they're destabilizing a lot of places, Australia, Vancouver, Canada, places like that, really having a negative impact with the amount of money that's flowing in there from China. And on top of that, they've got a very restive population that's not ethnically at all homogenous at all.
Yeah. And they handle them rough.
Yeah.
The thing with the Uyghurs, basically they got a gulag for the Uyghurs, a Muslim minority in China, mm-hmm. and they got them in concentration camps. And they don't care that we know it. That's another alarming thing.
Chinese students in American and other universities, they're monitored by the government. Their social media is monitored. They are controlled. They can't say squat about what's going on in China. I don't like regimes that are that oppressive and are not based in freedom. I mean, that's just I've got a thing with a totalitarianism. That's just me.
You know, yeah, it's like, you know, I think of China like there's this old movie called Salton Sea with a psychotic meth dealer. That's what China reminds me of, that guy. And he had a rabid ferret cage that he was sick on people. So I picture China as the meth dealer who's a psychotic, who's like, you know, evil. And the rabid ferret that he has in the cage to be like North Korea, you know. And they unleash that mm-hmm. thing to get the rest of the world distracted from shit that they're doing.
I think China's days, and you won't hear this on too many radio programs, but I think they're living the glory days right now. They have unfettered access as a quote unquote developing economy, courtesy of the WTO, and they've kind of run amok in the Western Pacific. And
right.
and to me, it's good to see the CNO listen to All Marine Radio, because you see the United States Navy talking about joint and combined patrols in the South China Sea, which is, yeah, what does China say when Australia, Japan, the United States, and anybody, New Zealand, South Korea, when we patrol the Western Pacific together? What do they say? They can't say shit.
Yeah.
Because, but when it's just the United States, yeah, it's like, oh, here goes the United States again. So to me, that move is long overdue, and that's how you stand up to the Chinese and you say, hey, look, we're not having it, okay? You need to come into the world that is run by the law, international law, that has stood us in good order for the last 100 years or more, and there's certain rules that simply because you say it otherwise do not make them invalid. Okay,
yeah.
Your 9-dash line, you can stick that up your ass, okay? You violate every major rule of territorial sovereignty with that son of a bitch, and nobody's buying it, okay? And so, your little gangster routine with your economy, like, hey, yeah, we'll love to have all your manufacturers selling to China, we'll import the shit out of your stuff, all boats will rise, and then as soon as you piss them off, they clamp off the fucking hose. Sorry,
yeah,
you're going under, bro, unless you do this. And everybody's seen that act, right? The whole thing in Sri Lanka and all of that, that they took over the port and whatnot. So I think that they're going to have a day of reconciliation and whatnot. Liz, why do you make so much noise? Can't you mute your microphone when you're drinking tea and making shit?
I actually was, yeah.
I know. We all fucking heard you.
I should have put my phone on mute.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I know.
Yeah,
anyway.
China.
All right. So, thoughts on China. Thoughts on China. Another question. Mac's been talking about the social makeup of the Marine Corps these days. What do your friends think of that? All right. Let me throw this out there. One of the problems the Marine Corps is dealing with is the reluctance of mid-level management to be able to hold the lines, and they're terrified of younger Marines saying, you're hazing me. So, like,
right,
for instance, I can't call Jeff Numbnuts. Hey, Numbnuts, come here. Or I can't call Timmy. Hey, Glasses, come here. Hey, Big Nose. I can't say any of that. Like, normal high school kids would say, you know, I have to say, hey, Lance Corporal Lynch, come here, please, sir. You know, I can't. EMI takes a congressional subcommittee to enact before I can do that, right? And the onus is on me not to violate him. How does an organization function like that when the inmates' rights now overwhelm the rights of the caretakers and the custodians, and we've made our staff sergeants and our sergeants babysitters because they don't train anymore because we outsource all that shit? And they can't discipline anymore because they've got a right. So that's kind of my take on the social upheaval in the Marine Corps. And so the email says, what do you two think about that? So who would like to go first?
I'll go. Well, Tim, you want to go or you want me to go?
You
want to
go, Tim, or you want to drink some more tea and make some more noise?
No, I will briefly. You know, I retired in 2000, so a lot of what you're seeing today, I never saw, but the facts are the facts, and the facts have been exposed by you and Gunner, hundreds of hours of tape talking about undisciplined units in combat, talking about seeing battalions roll in where you know they're going to take more casualties than they ought to because they're stupid, and that's so now we've got a culture that seems to be designed to produce more stupid battalions than smart battalions. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, classically in history, the answer is somebody comes and kicks our ass hard, and then we figure out we've got to change.
Right.
That's normally.
Yeah, I agree. And what you said, Mac, the reason that things like that happen, like the lack of it's the lack of backup for mid-level
right.
management,
right.
The lack of backup for that.
Yep.
Because the general officers at the very top are intimidated by Congress people, both in the Senate and in the House, who are looking for headlines, and the easy way to do it is to look towards the military. And so consequently, where before it used to be that it was understood that our only value comes to our ability to accomplish missions. And cohesion is a factor in that. It's a vital factor. And even if people who had never been in, they would at least pay lip service to that to that idea. But in the last 10 or 15 years, actually, it's been a war since the 70s, really. The idea has been that, no, the military is not there to accomplish national security missions. The military is there to be a reflection of the social values of our society as defined by one party or the other. And the party that most often defines that is the Democratic Party. So consequently, Senator Gillibrand intimidates the shit out of General Neller. He's afraid, just like General Amos was afraid when the snipers urinating in the mouths of the dead guys came out. You know, they descend upon the guy, and he doesn't have allies who in Congress anymore. Like used to see guys like, actually McCain actually used to do it sometimes, but even he's not a good example. A good example would be somebody like John. The guy was
Warner.
The senator from Virginia who married Elizabeth Taylor. Warner. Yeah, Warner and guys like that, they would stand up to these folks and protect us
right. So
that you could still have, you know, an organization that, you know, that was had the type of ethos where accomplishing the mission trumps everything. Not polite society, you know, and that's where we've lost it.
So
you can't,
but that's been going okay. I'm gonna play. Let me play devil's advocate with you. Yeah, but the military has always been used as the grounds for social experimentation. People said made quote unquote the same arguments when we integrated racially after World War II. They said, "Oh, this is going to be the ruination of it." You know, people.
The crucial difference,
right? Hold on.
Crucial difference.
So we've always been this, and that's why transsexuals and gays have targeted the military because they've watched these other things. So before the nation integrated, the military integrated. So if you want to start social change in the United States, you start it in the military, which can be enacted congressionally, and then the rest of the nation follows suit. So we've always been used as kind of a gateway.
Not always, though. I mean, I don't know why you say always. In World War II, actually in the Civil War, a lot of these commanders in the Union saying, we need more guys. We got this whole population, you know, of black people we can turn into troops. And there was resistance to that from Congress. It's opposite of the way it is now. And then this same thing in World War II. You had guys who were, their whole life, they grew up, you know, prejudiced. And now they're like, after you do Saipan-Tinian, you're like, hey, you know what? We're running out of people who are willing to volunteer for this. But this other stuff is different. This is, it's not so much we need these guys, let's put them in there, because that's what happened, you know, at the end of the Second World War, and then during Korea, and then finally, and in Vietnam, the same people who were yelling about social justice were saying, we're sending too many black people. You know, we're putting too many people,
too many
black guys
in there.
You
put the onus, on black America.
Fairly recent.
And the other thing you have to remember, because Jeff is right about the need, is that, I mean, when Jeff joined the Marine Corps and I joined the Navy in the late 70s, dude, race was a problem. It was a constant friggin' problem.
That's not my point. My point is that the military's always been used as a basis for social change. No?
Yeah,
you're
wrong. But it worked itself out.
Revolutionary War, 1812, they could give a shit. Even such Civil War.
Okay, so always, so maybe within the last 100 years.
I'd say the last 50 years.
I'd say you're wrong.
I would say too.
No,
you would be wrong. You would be wrong too, there, ass dog man.
Well, I mean, integrating black people into the military, what are you talking about?
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean besides that?
Well, you said it's a social change thing. No, it came from within the ranks. It came from general officers and stuff saying, we need more guys. It didn't come from some congressperson who wants votes.
No, you're wrong about that. Because, the idea of conscripting blacks and keeping them in segregated units a la Jim Crow, you're certainly right about that. Okay? But the idea of integrating the military was different. Yay?
Oh, it's Truman.
Thank you.
He did it.
Thank you. All right, now apologize to me and everybody listening for being a. I almost said something.
No, I'm not.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, it wasn't like there was a lot of resistance to that.
Yeah. And let me step in and diffuse this by going by bringing up something
diffuse
that has nothing to do with anything.
You're
making me nervous. No, but this is about Truman. The thing about Truman, when Truman retired from the presidency, he had nothing but $120 a month stipend from his World War I service. He was living in a 2-bedroom house in back in Missouri.
Yep.
Dignified, and like it was Congress that then decided, hey, we've got to start giving these guys some money so they can live in a proper style to host other heads of nations and whatnot. Think back when Truman integrated the service, back then there wasn't like gigantic golden parachutes for former congressmen and senators and presidents. There wasn't any of that. Back then we had a small government. It was a little bit more efficient.
There was no pension for the president?
Yeah. No, there's none. Truman got by on $120 a month for years, well, at least a year, before Congress passed the law to give him a stipend as a retired president.
No shit.
Now they get a full, that's no shit. Now they get a full salary, full Secret Service protection detail for them and their entire family when they could afford to hire their own, quite frankly. It's just maddening how the bureaucracy grows and grows and grows, and with it, the deep state. Thank you very much.
Oh, shit!
Good job.
Mr. Deep,
thank you, buddy.
Timmy Deep State Lynch, here on a Wednesday edition of Auburn Radio. That was well done. All right, boys, we got to take about a 4-minute break. We'll come back. I've got a couple more questions for you. And we'll continue. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of Allmarine Radio coming up next on your home for it here, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Okay. America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on Allmarine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on Allmarine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at AllmarineRadio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. And press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I think everybody who's familiar with the program knows that I sing the living shit out of this song. I could be Toby Keith's voice double on any given night, but I'm not. After we get done with the cage match, known as this round table, Nancy Dunham's going to join us. And I heard from Nancy Dunham last week when she wrote this. Hello, Mac! Exclamation mark. My name is Nancy Dunham. I'm a retired civilian hospital chaplain who was designated as an honorary Marine nearly 4 years ago. And then in parentheses, I am mobility and self-care limited due to cerebral palsy. I'm a daily listener to the podcast and wish I'd had Struggle Well and the concept of post-traumatic winning in my go bag when serving patients, family members, and staff. I'm spreading the word whenever I can. God bless, Godspeed to you, Mike, Josh, Ken, and the team. Oorah, Semper Fi, from an honorary sister in Pennsylvania. So I shot her a message this morning, and she's going to join us. You're going to meet Nancy Dunham, who wrote that. So pretty cool stuff, pretty cool stuff. Continuing with me is the Honorable Jeff Kenny, and he in California, and from McAllen, Texas, the Honorable Timothy Lynch. Mac, email. Mac, well, first of all, how cool is that to get emails like that, boys?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no. And it's just it's a great part of my day. So, anyway, so she's going to come on. Email says this. Hey, Mac, what's on your friends' minds that they would like to talk about? So could you put your own personal agenda aside for a second, right? Put the mirror down and let your friends talk about what's on their mind. So, Tim, are you there? We lost it. Oh, hold on. Whoops, my bad. Sorry about that, Timmy.
Oh, that's okay, brother. I'm here.
All right. So what's on, Timmy, what's on your mind today other than the deep state? Nothing.
This Mueller investigation comes up empty stuff that's hitting the wires right now that gets on my mind because it just infuriates me that we've been through this charade for so long. But
let's talk about that because I think that bothers a lot of people in this country that no matter look at the end of the day when you saw this 2 years of this shit go on. Right. What is mm-hmm. it? Is there any lesson in there for any future impaneling of a special prosecutor ought there to be limits or at least thresholds, or you impanel them for a relatively short period of time. You can, right, almost like a grand jury, come back to me with your findings of fact within 90 days, and then we will decide if we will authorize anything further to that. Is there any way that you would do that? Because once you let that genie out of the jar, you're screwed, Timmy.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely agree. And there was a statute for – yeah, I'm here, bro. You got me?
Yeah, I got you. Okay. No, you agreed. You agreed with me, which shocked me.
I do agree with you, but there is the statute in that law that says there's got to be a crime that you're investigating to start with, and they never even met that. They never even met that part of the statute. So it would be nice to limit the special prosecutor. I think what the lesson learned is we ought to get rid of the special prosecutor, because they don't they don't seem to do that good of a damn job, but they sure can spend some money, man.
Honestly, that. Jeff, your thoughts?
Yes, I agree. And here's the thing. I was watching this documentary regarding the Clinton investigation, the culminated with the Monica Lewinsky thing. And that started out as a special prosecutor investigation of Whitewater. And the guy who was doing that, his name was
Ken Starr.
Yeah, Ken Starr. He was interviewed. He said, I went to Janet Reno, who was the attorney general, and said, look, I don't have anything on this Whitewater that can be done now because this guy Jim McDougal is dead and his wife is, you know, taking the fifth and all this stuff. And he said, but all this stuff is coming up about sexual misconduct. It has nothing to do with the Whitewater thing. What should I do? And she told him, a Clinton appointee, she said, go after it. Then all these years, I thought he just – wherever he wanted to go, he just went, which it appears what Mueller's doing. So I think I'm with Tim on this. I think, or you, maybe they shouldn't have any more. And if it's in panel, it's only in panel by the Supreme Court. I mean, what else I got to do? You know what I mean? Where then you know that at least, you get, that is a truly bipartisan group, because you got people who've been appointed on it from both sides of the aisle.
And insulated, too. Bipartisan and insulated. So,
there's one thing that's a constant annoyance probably to people who are both Republicans and Democrats is how disappointed you are with those judges. You know, and so that means it's the closest thing to fair we got. So I'd say if we're going to have something like that, it's got to be them that do it.
When everybody's upset at the outcome. I agree with you. That is a sign of truly compromise, because it doesn't work unless everybody's pissed.
Right.
I can't believe, that's all we got. And I can't believe, that is a sign of that people had to push to the middle. All right, Jeff.
And the noise that you heard, that is not Timmy making tea. I know what he's doing. He's doing defenses there for President Trump and McCallum. He's doing a Yankee D. He's doing a Battis. He's doing all that shit.
This is the problem of being on the phone with Kenny. Is he knows what he knows me too well.
He knows you. He knows you. All right, Jeff. What's on your mind? Are there anything anywhere? What's on your mind? There's a lot of stuff in there.
Well, we covered a couple of the things already. Like we're talking about the social stuff and how it affects the Marine Corps. That's a big one.
Let me just tell you. And we see that when you read these investigations about the Navy. The Marine Corps is its own Cro-Magnon organization that is the least advanced of the services in terms of socially, and is the last to go there. There's only in the polling about women in combat arms MOSs, there's only two sectors of the United States military that voted against that were overwhelmingly not in favor of that, and that was the Marine Corps and the Special Forces community.
Right.
When the most conservative is affected by it, and then you read the dysfunctional stuff coming out of the naval investigations and what a shit show that is. I read an email from a parent that sent me one that said admirals are now flying out to ships unannounced. And like, hey skipper, let's go for a walk. Yeah, this is your ship at work. I want to see what's going on there. And people are getting fired from jobs because of it. And it, which is good to see, right? Which is good to see finally. But, the stuff that you read coming out of those guys, guys drowning at night because your ship is so fucked up that it can't even navigate the sea, something we've done for a couple hundred years, you know, because we have our heads so far up our ass. And to me, that is, I would lay that directly at the social, what word do I want? The social shit that is going on. Shit is a good term.
Yeah.
The social shit that's going on in the American military, which is a reflection of American society. And look, we've all been told, hey, look, it's about the standards, right? It doesn't matter. And it's like, okay, you know, and then it's like, okay, but you're not going to hold them to the standard? You said you would.
Yeah, you're right, man. You're absolutely right. It's like my wife is a product of 12 years of Catholic school. And she says, I can't see how you guys can do your job. You must constantly be dealing with distractions because of the integration, you know, just between the men and the women. And, when you think about it, there's like red lines that are not specified, but they are there that you can't cross. And sometimes there's a new red line. You cross it at your own peril, unknowingly, you know, and I think that's a big part of it.
All right. So anyway, you said we touched on that, so I don't want to derail you from your moment of glory here. What else is occupying your thoughts these days?
Well, not to steal Timmy's thunder, but the whole Mueller thing, it's not so much the Mueller thing specifically, but it's the idea that that mechanisms of the government can be weaponized for personal reasons.
Let me tell you, that's straight up fucking terrifying. So when you step back and look at this, a completely manufactured bunch of bullshit launched this and had the effect that we watched it ripple through the American government in the FBI, and it's all a lie? It's all a fabricated lie financed by political people, that we had people in positions of power that should have looked at it and called it what it was.
Yeah.
And stood up. That didn't happen. That's scary.
Studying tactics our whole life. Part of you suspects that this whole thing with Mueller is like a spoiling attack, because they know how vulnerable they are and how out in the open it is, the effort to subvert the Constitution in regards to the election of Trump. And not just the people who are in the mechanisms of the government, but also the people from the last administration who signed off on this stuff. Like the unmasking of people in the interim between when the election was held in November and when our inauguration was held in January. The unmasking of these people, that's a weaponization of of a government function solely to go after certain to cause anguish and distraction to certain individuals, and that's just kind of scary.
When you put the pieces together, a media that's not concerned about the truth. I mean, look at how many times the New York papers, take the New York Times by itself, has had to publicly retract high profile stories.
Right.
Right, the New York Times, their news division, is supposedly the platinum standard for news.
Right.
And they are retracting stories because their zest, right, and their zeal. I mean, so to me, a fidelity to the truth is, you combine that with appointed office holders who swear an oath to the Constitution, but who won't live by that oath. And Comey, to me, is a poster child for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the issues that guy confronted were not that complicated, right? He made every bit of it worse by not looking at the president and saying, yeah, look, like Comey's ever going to want for a job or need money in his life if Donald Trump fires his ass, right?
Right. Yeah.
You know, but I don't know what was his design. Why didn't you do the right thing? The right thing was to look at him and say, I can't talk about that with you, right? I it's an ongoing investigation. I can brief you on where we're at. Beyond that, I cannot have a discussion about that with you. And then he continues to go, sir, I'm leaving right now, and walk out the fucking door.
And the complicator of that is, I mean, by that time, the guy who'd normally be in there with him, you know, Sessions, had recused himself. Right. So, you know, and then on the – and Trump's probably wondering, like I would be, okay, I'm a expert at running my business. And I thought, you know, this thing is supposed to run a certain way. But the, when Hillary gets, you know, all her investigation regarding her emails and her bleach bit stuff and everything, this guy Comey made the decision, apparently. You never heard anything from the Attorney General Lynn, you know, that that she was going to – they weren't going to investigate it. The FBI guy, that's like having a cop say, we're not going to prosecute John Gotti. Who the hell are you to say that?
Yeah.
You got to be a the Attorney General or somebody, you know, or district attorney to make that announcement.
And let's go a little bit deeper on the Mueller thing.
Oh, shit.
Remember the anthrax attacks after 9/11? When those happened, I was working at Dugway Proving Grounds as a contractor. So I'm out at the nation's biological and chemical warfare training center, right?
You're everywhere.
He's like like Kim.
You're like gonorrhea. Yeah,
no, I was. It was right before I went to Iraq. So I'm out there working as a contractor, putting through these weapons of mass destruction civil support teams. That's what my job was. But when the FBI agents came down to the biological, that was not a pleasant experience for those biologists. And how many guys did Mueller hound, to suicide?
One of them
committed
suicide.
Evidence
you're
whatsoever.
Right. Another one they had to
no
pay
evidence.
Got millions of dollars. Right.
Right, and I tell you, the only thing that saved the guys at Dugway was the strain that they found in those envelopes only came from Fort Meade. They didn't have that strain out of Dugway. All they had out of Dugway was what they thought was attenuated vaccine, which turned out to be live, but that wasn't until years later they found that out.
Who committed suicide? Yeah. What are you talking about?
One of the guys at Mueller decided
was
guilty.
There's two
for,
of them, wasn't
it?
Yeah, two
even
guys
though,
that they...
Even though Bin Laden actually said... explicitly, we did the anthrax thing. They decided it couldn't be Muslim fundamentalists who did that because that would be too much Muslim fundamental. They decided who should be guilty and then went after who they thought should be guilty. That's not the way it's supposed to work.
That's exactly right. And then you can add insult on top of injury because how much do they spend cleaning up the Senate after they get to open up those letters? Correspond that to how much they spent at the Washington, D.C. post office where they all came through. You know, millions and millions to make sure the senators are safe. Nothing for the mail handlers. The hell with them. I mean, that's just, it's just great.
Yeah.
It's not American, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I hate that shit. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. So that's what's on both your, that's what's inside both of your two pinheads this week.
You bet, yeah.
That's, there you go. Well, there you have it. That should scare the shit out of everybody. There you have it. That's what's in pinheads times two. There you go. So I hope you're happy. Whoever wrote that email, I hope you're happy. I hope you just scared the shit out of most of the people that listen to this program. Well done. Well done. The Mac, I have a question for you guys. I want to talk about guns because I like talking about guns. I'm curious. All of your guests, what are the favorite weapon? You can only pick one, and it needs to be a firearm. Favorite firearm, Jeff?
45 Colt.
The M1911?
Yes.
That's a man's weapon, just so you know.
That's a weapon that will stop you.
Yeah, but if you say that in front of Mike Musselman, he'll say, whatever, dude. Like, give me a 38 with a hollow point, I'll stop you. Give me a whole variety of weapons, I'll stop you. So this lore of stopping power and the 45, he spits on. In fact, he would tell you this. The 45 would have never been adopted or developed by the American military had they had better ballistic engineers. Then they would have just engineered a better round for the 38 revolver, which was the sidearm of choice in the American military. And the 45 would have never got invented, and the 38 would have, it's more reliable because revolvers are more reliable than magazine-fed weapons. And
well, I would respectfully disagree with you.
Sir, you're out of order. So anyway, but that's what he would say. He would say
ask
that.
Ask Timmy what his favorite gun is.
I'm not done with you there.
All right.
Wait a minute. And who the fuck put you in charge? Stand.
Trying to help.
Stand down. Stand down, I say. Lynch, your favorite weapon?
1911, brother. The same one that came in Afghanistan.
You God, okay. Definitely let me leave you two lovebirds to yourselves, all right? I'll leave you guys alone.
No,
you got me alone.
I was, I was going to visit Jeff at his little fob there, right, because they had the cheeseburger guacamole lunch thing going. It was a great place.
What?
And I'm walking in with Jeff and my
friend.
Wait,
what are you talking about? In Afghanistan?
Jalalabad.
You had guacamole?
Apparently.
Yeah, he had guacamole. He had the best damn cook in that little ass feed pack he had inside that Afghan base in the whole eastern Afghanistan.
Really?
I went to all the deep packs.
Guacamole?
It was the best place to eat.
How the hell
guacamole,
do you get guacamole
every day?
How do you get? Do they grow avocados?
They fly that shit in from Dubai. They fly it on planes. They had 5 pound bags of ice at Just Five. I would go on Thursdays when we had happy hour at the Taj at the bar. I'd tell the cook, hey, I got a cookout or something. He'd give me 5 pound bags of ice from Saudi Arabia. They would fly in there.
Easy.
5 pounds.
The statute of limitations isn't done yet. Right?
But I'm walking into Jeff's VFAC, and the lieutenant colonel, the army guy that runs the thing, I've got the weapon on safe, but the hammer's back. The safety's on, hammer's back, gun's unloaded. Right. He jumps up from the table and looks at it. Then he recognizes it's a 1911 and sits down, and I pretend like I didn't see anything. Jeff was fucking howling. But that's always been my favorite gun.
That was a bizarre but interesting place. Yeah.
I would say, I don't know. I have an M1 Garand that I like to shoot. You shoot that, and you see the signature that goes up. You know, if you're shooting into the dirt, and that's a weapon, man. That is like a no shit weapon. You know what weapon I'd like to fire that I've never fired just to see the difference is the M14.
Yeah, I fired the M14. It's bodacious, man. It's ridgeline to ridgeline in Vietnam type stuff.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing about the 1911, and I don't mean to not back up the gunner because he's much better at this crap than I am, but it's a smoother firing weapon. If you're shooting a shit ton of rounds, it's much easier on your hands and your arms than like a 40 or a 10 millimeter. But not a 9, because 9s are,
The 45?
The people that squat the P use a 9, but the 45, it is at least as smooth. So if you're working it all day on a range, you're not, at the end of the day, you're not, your hands and your arms aren't that bad.
Yeah, and like in World War I, they couldn't make enough 1911s, so they Smith & Wesson and Colt, they fabricated 45 revolvers, and those things, 1917, the model Smith & Wesson 1917, outstanding weapon, 45 revolver. And then law enforcement folks would use those through the 20s and 30s. Until they invented in 1935 the 357 Magnum, which is kind of like what, your gunner's talking about. That's the improvement. Two improvements to the 38. Number one was the 357, but shortly before that, they had a weapon called the Super 30, 38 Super, and it looked exactly like a Colt 1911, but it was chambered for 38, and it was a very hot weapon, and very good weapon.
What does hot mean?
I mean, the fucking round had tremendous velocity.
Okay, all right.
38 Super.
All right.
That was the most powerful handgun. That existed between, besides the 45, as far as velocity and stuff like that.
Right, which
proves the 1920s, right? When they invented the 357 and 35.
Which proves his point, that you didn't need a new weapon system, you needed better ammunition.
But I mean, I think the Colt was great. It killed people. Colt 45.
Is that your definition? So, well, let me tell you, when I was a second lieutenant, I'm in the Buccaneer. Right
at Camp. Oh yeah, in Hanson.
At Camp Hanson, big pink building called the Buccaneer. I don't know why.
Yeah,
and I'm reading the Daily or the Okinawan, which was a paper that 3rd Marine Division, 3rd MAF put out at the time. And there was an interview with General James Day. Okay.
Yes, Medal of Honor winner.
Medal of Honor winner. And
Okinawa Corporal. Medal of Honor.
Exactly, and when you read his citation, holy shit. Okay, but the interesting thing about this is I'm talking to Duffy White, okay, and Duffy's telling me that he was at the White House working for Bill Clinton when they awarded that Medal of Honor, that it had been lost, and he went to a reunion, and guys in his unit said, what happened to the Medal of Honor? And he said, you were written up for the Medal of Honor. And he's like, I don't know, I never, for what you did on Okinawa, it never went through. the clerk that typed it up had saved a copy of it, and he had it, lo, all these years later. They resubmitted it, and he was awarded it, and he died like months after he received the award.
But you know, he was the CG when we did the first, we were talking yesterday about the UDPs.
Right.
He was first Mardiv CG when we started doing it. He came and talked to us. He's a very good, he's like the Barrow Wilson type guy. But he was a CO-19 in Vietnam as a major. And he got commissioned there in the Korean War. And he's a tremendous career, that guy. Outstanding guy, too.
And you, I'll tell you what, you read this and you're like, whoa. But anyway, I'm reading the article. And
he's using a BAR, he's using a couple M1s,
So he says, so they're asking him, so that's 1985. What weapon systems, you know, Marine Corps is changing, the Jeep is going away, the steel pot's going away, the 45's going away, we're getting a Humvee, the Dragon, the squad automatic weapon. Are there any changes that you're not too fond of? And he said, well, you know, I don't think you can really appreciate the 45 until you shoot somebody with it.
And I've never shot anybody with 45, but I know what he means.
That's a quote, and he said, "Look, he said the beauty
so
of that."
So Gunner Muslim put that in his pipe and smoke.
Yeah, exactly. And he just scoffs at it. He said, "Look, all you had to do was nick somebody with that big fat round, and they were going down, and then you could shoot them, then you could finish them."
Yep.
But it was just hilarious.
Piss in their mouth if you're from.
Yeah, if you're a scout sniper, if you got the SS tattoo, you know. So, anyway. Yeah, I don't even want to. So, look, Marines have been behaving badly in every conflict that they've ever participated in.
Yeah, that's not bad, though.
It's not something that we're proud of, but it's something that does happen when leadership, in my opinion, when leadership sometimes is not as vigilant as it should be, and that shit happens. The reaction to it, though, was, and then the comment, General Amos's, you know, round the world tour to wire brush everybody. It's like, hey, sir, thank you for coming out, and I want to apologize on behalf of all of us for what happened, because it certainly should have happened. But here's a copy of With the Old Breed, okay? And if this, you don't think this shit's been going on forever.
Hell yeah. Pulling his teeth out of their mouth.
Yeah, then, and you even had White Snafu telling Eugene,
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Don't
You'll
do
never
it.
Forget it.
Yeah,
right.
Don't go there, which is a little bit of mental health advice.
That Snafu guy in that show, The Pacific, is now the guy who played Freddie Mercury. This is just
incidental. No, don't tell us that. Come on.
Look, just because Marines behave badly is no reason not to like them. That's what I say.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. No, you know, but it does happen, and I think it would have helped to put it in historical context, because let me tell you, if we would have had cell phones during World War II, and people were instant messaging their mom images from Tarawa,
betcha.
We would not have
never would have got past Tehran. And that's, you know what I mean?
All right. Men, thank you very much for the visit.
Thank you, Mac, and it's good hearing from you, Timmy.
Always a pleasure, Jeff. Mac, and my dad says one of the past best to the Boaster.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Tell him and your uncle, I said, hey.
That's right. Your dad tell him Frogman.
That's exactly what I'm going to tell him, Frogman. All right, boys.
All right. There you have it. Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny here on a Wednesday. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to meet Nancy Dunham. She's a listener from Pennsylvania. She used to be a chaplain. She has cerebral palsy, and she wrote me a nice email. And so I called her and said, hey, why don't you hop on the program with me? So don't touch that dial. You're going to meet a fan of the show. You're going to meet somebody who's been in the business of helping other people, which is something that we're all about here. So more of this great program coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is that you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.